WAGE.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government and its lapdog supporters in the media don't want you to know about. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and we've got an interesting show for you tonight. I used to work in Congress, as many of you know, and I was amazed at all the information that we learned in Congress that was never conveyed to the American people. So that's why I'm here giving you the inside scoop. The topic today, why are Republicans so anti-democratic? No, I'm not talking about the Democratic Party. Why is the Republican Party so against democracy? You think that's an extreme charge? Well, let me tell you, I'm not referring to long-ago history like Watergate or Iran-Contra. No, not at all. In the last 5 years, as we're going to talk about in today's show, Republicans and their conservative allies have systematically attacked our elections, the rule of law, and our political traditions. In fact, in just the last 5 years, they've refused to play fair in so many instances that, frankly, it was difficult preparing for this show. I just don't have time to mention it all. Now, you may think I'm talking about the California recall, and I am. But I want to take this conversation beyond the California recall. There, of course, the Republicans refused to accept the election of Gray Davis, and Republican Congressman Darrell Issa spent millions to fund this recall effort. And the media loves this circus. But they really haven't focused on the pattern here, a pattern that began 5 years ago with impeachment, where conservatives spent millions of dollars to try to find all of Clinton's dirty laundry, and then impeached him on a charge of really lying about cheating on his wife. Take it to the election of 2000, where you have Governor Jeb Bush of Florida and Secretary of State Katherine Harris systematically purging the voting rolls to get rid of 91,000 Floridians, mostly black Democrats. And then, of course, there was the decision by five of the seven Republican justices on the Supreme Court, a decision that was so illogical and so illegal that even Sandra Day O'Connor's clerk, she voted for that opinion, which made Bush president. Sandra Day O'Connor's clerk contacted me and told me that he thought the decision was lawless and his boss was a hypocrite. That's pretty extreme. Why did he contact me? Well, I think, as some of you know, I began my radio career with an email I sent out, a Q&A, Layman's Guide to Bush v. Gore, that explained the decision and got a lot of public attention. And that's how he contacted me. So it's kind of fun for me to bring back this issue and to revisit people like Katherine Harris, who's now in Congress, and in fact, when she went to speak in Florida, refused to allow opponents of hers to distribute flyers condemning her opinion. She confiscated their flyers and put out her own, kind of similar to George Bush, who appeared at a South Carolina airport and made his Secret Service arrest people who didn't agree with him. Signs that supported Bush were allowed in. A guy with a sign that didn't support Bush was put in jail and now awaits a trial for a charge of up to 6 months imprisonment. There's so much more. There's Karl Rove. We can talk about his famous dirty tricks. We can talk about the Speaker of the House and his dirty tricks, like having lobbyists dress up as ordinary people. There's Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, who controls the voting in Nebraska. He's got his own firm, and they control the counting of the votes. You got Orrin Hatch, who used to believe a minority in the Senate, in the Judiciary Committee, should be able to have a voice in choosing judges, but now has gone completely 180 degrees and says he's changed his mind. The Democrats, when they're in the minority, they can't choose judges. You got Bill Thomas, Chairman Bill Thomas of the House, who called the police on House Democrats because they dared to defy his will and actually read a bill before voting on it. You've got all of the efforts of the Bush administration to obstruct science, to actually suppress scientific information. There's so much information here that I'm going to do a whole other show on it, but it has to do with things like global warming, water standards, breast cancer, pollution, lead in children's blood, workplace injuries, stem cells, abortion, all of this well-documented, Wall Street Journal, but not very much talked about in the media. You got the president actually changing science to fit his agenda. You've got the president obstructing investigations into the Energy Task Force, obstructing the 9/11 investigation. And it's not just out of Washington. We know in Texas, we've got Karl Rove again and Tom DeLay, the guy who's really in charge in the House of Representatives. What are they doing? They're not only gerrymandering, redistricting the Texas lines for the first time outside the 10 years that is political tradition. and really, frankly, taking the minorities in Texas, blacks, Hispanics, and putting them all in one district, kind of reminds you of South Africa. Not only are they doing that, but when the Democrats tried to stop them, the Texas Democrats, they actually called the Federal Department of Homeland Security and ordered them to stop looking out for terrorists and instead go and track Democrats. Your tax dollars paid for that. We have Colorado, which did its own gerrymandering. We've got Alabama, where we've got the Chief Justice, Roy Moore, defying a court order to remove a 3-ton granite Ten Commandments. And here in Virginia, the head of the Republican Party convicted of eavesdropping on the Democratic Party. Oh, and we also have Ambassador Wilson, who went down to, you may remember, to find out the truth about the uranium charge in Niger. And so Republican operatives decided to get back at him for telling the truth to the American public, and they outed his wife as a CIA agent. By the way, that's clearly a crime. But they did it to try to stop him from telling the truth. Why are the Republicans doing all these unfair things? I want to hear from you. I want to know, do you defend these tactics? Do you think they're reasonable? Do you challenge what I'm saying? I mean, I can give you the facts in any of these things. And if you're a Democrat, do you think that the Democrats really should do the same thing? That maybe playing unfair is the way you win elections today in America, and that the Democrats should do the same? Or do you think the Democrats already are? I want to hear from you. Call in the local number, 703-777-1200. If you're listening on the web via IBN, you can call toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. Again, call from anywhere, 703-777-1200. If you're outside of Northern Virginia or Metro D.C., you can dial toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. I want to hear from you. Why do you think the Republicans are so anti-democratic? One last way to reach me, you can email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And we're going to take your calls and talk about this failure of democracy, failure to play by the rules by the Republican Party. But first, I want to give you the scoop. The news this week, of course, was mostly about the failure of the electric grid. Some 50 million Americans in 8 states, Canadians too, were in the dark. And, of course, the first reaction of the government, our government, was to blame Canada. I guess they were watching too much South Park. But it turns out that from what we know best now, that a tree in Ohio, maybe it was 2 trees, fell on some transmission lines and destroyed electricity in 8 states. Now, if a tree in Ohio can do this, imagine how a more severe thing, a terrorist attack, for example, could attack our electricity grid. Clearly, we've got to have improvements in our infrastructure. And in fact, this needs been predicted for years. Most of our infrastructure is decaying from the 1950s, and the Democrats have been trying to do this. They're kind of like wise parents to Democrats. We talked about this 2 shows ago. The Democrats are the fiscal conservatives these days, and they would be like telling a kid, hey, Johnny, you know, if you spend all your money on ice cream, you won't be able to go to college. And I imagine the Republicans like this big ice cream truck playing the music and saying, hey, kids, eat today, and, you know, I'll be gone tomorrow. But we need this infrastructure help. We have spent, in this year, 2003, the lowest amount on the electricity grid since the Great Depression. Is it expensive? It is. It'll cost $54 billion to fix it. And that's a lot of money. But when you think about it, it's 1/40th of George Bush's tax cuts. Think about it. So for all those millionaires that are getting 100 grand from George Bush, they're only going to get 98 grand if they believe that they want a reliable electricity source. One that won't go down in a minute, and one that will protect against terrorist attacks. So it's really not that much money. It's the kind of money that should be spent. In fact, ironically, Gray Davis, who's being attacked for spending too much, one of the things he spent on is California's infrastructure, these kind of long-term needs. Of course, the Democratic Energy Plan has been proposed for at least a couple years now, and the Republicans have been filibustering it. Now, you may not have heard about that on the media. I think the media is focusing on the few judges of only 4 out of about 100 that Democrats have filibustered. But Republicans use a filibuster too, and that's their right. I don't deny that. They don't want the Democratic Energy Plan. Why not? Well, they don't want to protect the electricity grid unless we also drill for oil and gas in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, one of the few areas of pristine wilderness left in America. They think we need to drill there, and so they won't support the electricity grid. They're filibustering that, even though it has a majority in the Senate. The other thing they want is corporate welfare. They want to give billions of dollars to gas and oil companies. The Democrats said no, and so there's been an impasse in the Senate. Now, Hillary Clinton has said just recently she's going to go back and focus just the electricity grid. George Bush says he got a wake-up call. Well, we'll see. We'll see if he's woken up at all. You know, his wake-up call kind of reminds me of that old Saturday Night Live episode that they don't play anymore for some reason, which shows what America would be like if Gore were president or Bush were president. And with Gore, everything's humming along just fine. It's really boring because Gore is boring, but America is humming along. And then they show George Bush. That's what Wake Up Bush reminds me of, because he's hiding under his desk. And when they force him to come out and talk to the American people, which he doesn't want to do, he says, "I'm sorry, America. I didn't mean to ruin everything and give us the worst economy and the worst debt and take us into war and the lights going out and all." And of course, you see in the back, the lights are off in the White House and there's this fire in the back out the window. You know, that was just a joke on Saturday Night Live, but I'm not so sure that it's too far from the truth today. One thing the blackout didn't stop, though, was Bush's fundraising. He was in California raising millions of dollars, and he really couldn't take the time out to even mention the blackout affecting 50 million Americans while he was at his fundraiser. And I guess that's understandable. He really didn't want a soundbite showing him raking in the dough, and he knew if he talked about the blackout, they played on the evening news. So that was very clever, Karl Rove, his political advisor, Karl Rove. But that's not really something a leader should do. How much is he raising? Well, statistics show from some people he's getting as much as $500,000 a pop. Who are these people? We don't know. George Bush won't tell us. He won't tell us. He doesn't think it's relevant who's paying him $500,000 pooling in that dough. And I think one of the reasons why he doesn't want us to know is because it's actually, when you think about it, a pretty cool money laundering operation. Now, I don't mean to suggest that it's illegal. The scary thing is it's legal. But what does George Bush do? He rakes in the dough, right? And then he gives 100 times that amount to the people that gave him the money. One of the clearest examples, and this has not been hardly talked about in the media at all, is the new Bush plan to privatize the American airwaves. That's right. The television, radio, airwaves, all of that belongs to the public. They get licenses. They pay the government some $770 billion. That's a lot of money. George Bush wants to give it all away for free. For free. And they're just going to take this. I guess it's kind of like selling our oceans or selling our rivers. And I'm sure that he'll get something back in terms of a campaign contribution. This is the same reason why George Bush won't modernize our chemical, nuclear, and water plants to protect us from terrorism. After all, these things cost the chemical, nuclear, and water plants money. Sure, it would save thousands of lives, but he doesn't want the government to spend it. Gotta go for those tax cuts. And he doesn't want the corporations to spend it because they fund his political donations. So no one's spending it. And here's a wake-up call for you, George Bush. Fix our insecurities in our nuclear plants, our chemical plants, our water plants. Please, let's not have a terrorist attack. And then you say, oh, this was a wake-up call. I guess I have to do something about it. He's also offering immunity for oil companies in Iraq. Executive Order 13303, issued in May, and I got to thank the LA Times, who just discovered this in August. This gives immunity for oil companies in Iraq who commit crimes, who bribe officials, who do human rights violations. I guess if they torture someone, they're safe. Environmental problems, and also whistleblowers. If someone finds out that, Halliburton is committing crimes and beating people and tells it to the press, Halliburton can then fire them. Now, why is George Bush protecting these companies, giving them immunity? I think it has to do with a little bit of the quid pro quo, but it's pretty shocking when you think about it, and I hope by talking about it and giving you the information, we can bring this into the public eye and get this executive order rescinded. Finally, we have events in Israel. I think you may have heard on CNN News. We accidentally shot a Palestinian journalist. Hopefully this will get George Bush to understand the reality of terrorism and the reality of what's going on in the state of Israel, where we have Israel fighting much more daily terrorist attacks and trying to build up a fence to stop the terrorist attacks. And George Bush, this big fighter against terrorism in the United States, is threatening to withhold aid to Israel, to actually punish Israel for building this fence to keep out terrorists. Now, we built a fence to keep out illegal immigrants in Mexico. Imagine if people were actually coming in to try to kill Americans. You know, we need to protect our borders. Israel needs to protect its borders. And I think supporters of Israel need to recognize what this president is doing. He's talking two sides of his mouth. He does one thing for America and something totally different for Israel. And you'd also, just to end the scoop, I got to tell you, Idi Amin, dictator, died, kind of the original terrorist, just this week. He killed 200,000 to 300,000 people, died in Saudi Arabia. We didn't do anything about him. We're letting Charles Taylor live peacefully in Nigeria. For all the talk that, okay, Iraq wasn't about nuclear weapons, and it wasn't about chemical, and it wasn't about biological, because we haven't found any of those, it's really all about human rights, then why aren't we practicing it in the rest of the world? Meanwhile, Afghanistan descends into anarchy. But that's the scoop. I want to hear from you back on my main question. Why is the Republican Party so anti-democratic? What do you think about it? What do you want to do about it? And do you think the Democrats should do anything at all about it? Maybe you challenge my very assumptions. Call in, let me know. The numbers here are 703-777-1200. Or you can call toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. The lines are open, and I wait for your call right back after this.
Here's a message about energy-efficient Anderson Windows from J.T. Hurst & Company. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. Different windows can make a big difference in the way you feel about your home. Anderson Windows, with their high-performance, low-E insulating glass, insulate up to 41% better in the summertime than windows with standard dual-pane glass. This means comfort in heat, cold, rain, or shine. Anderson Windows can also help lower your energy bills, and that's bound to give you a good feeling. Stop in and see the full line of Anderson Windows at J.T. Hurst & Company. The pros at J.T. Hurst can locate a contractor to do the job for you or give you some helpful tips on how you can do it yourself. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg, Anderson Windows, long live the home.
Here we are at the beginning of the 21st century, a time of rapid change in technology. At NOVEC, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, we spend a good part of our day using the latest technologies to provide our customers with the most reliable electric service possible. Simply put, when you hit the switch, the light comes on, the toaster toasts, the oven cooks, and the computer announces you've got mail. The rest of our day is spent using slightly older business methods. For more than 60 years, we've dedicated ourselves to making our communities better places to live and work, lending our time, resources, and support to organizations that make real differences in people's lives, embracing the future while holding on to our heritage. Some things are meant to change. Some things are not. We're NOVEC, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com. NOVEC. I got the power to move ya.
We're back here at the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The lines are open. The number here is 703-777-1200. Or you can call toll-free if you're outside Northern Virginia in Washington, D.C. by dialing 877-57-SCOOP. We're talking today about why the Republican Party is acting so anti-democratically. And I guess conservatives are afraid to call in on this one, but I want to know from you. Can you defend this? Do you think this is good? Any aspect of what I brought up, do you think it's a good idea? And if you're a Democrat, do you think that we need to play unfair too? Break our own rules? After all, the public doesn't seem to notice that most of this, and I would say just about all, is coming from one party. All this anti-democracy, breaking the rules. I want to know if you agree with me. Do you disagree? And if you do, what do you think? What do you think should be done about it? I got an email here that I want to read to you. I'm still waiting for your calls, but I got an email from Mark Overholzer. Mark's from Coon Rapids, Minnesota, and he's called in before. Mark Overholzer writes, "Hey, Marky, got a question. If Republicans are so anti-democratic, why then are Democrats the ones building a reputation for engaging in and encouraging lawlessness, as they did when they tried to rewrite Florida's election law, the 7-day limit for recounts, and New Jersey's election law, referring to Lautenberg, and now their determination to rewrite the recall provision of the California State Constitution? Methinks your party doth protest too much, Mark. Well, let me see if I can respond to this. I'll go one by one. First of all, Florida's election law. Now, I know a lot about this because, like I said, I was sort of an expert on the election. The seven-day limit, it was clear from Florida law. And by the way, this goes back to 1897. I know this is sort of a technical response, but I want to answer Mark Oberholder's question perfectly here. Florida has always held, for more than 100 years, that getting an election right is more important than any of the technical deadline details. Now, you may like that law, you may not like that law, but that's Florida law. And in fact, in 1987, they actually felt that the Miami election was so bad and so overridden by fraud that the courts in Florida actually ordered them to redo the entire election. So this is a tradition in Florida, Mark Oberholzer, and the tradition is that it's too important who's elected than to let a deadline get in your way. And I'll just give you an example that I know as a practicing lawyer. When I worked as a trial lawyer, a lot of times I tried to get my papers in on time. I really did. But my opponents sometimes would miss deadlines. And the deadline would be a paper's due on Wednesday, and that was the deadline. And my opponent might have sent papers in on the following Friday, 2 days late. And a couple times I would complain, and I'd write to the judges, and I'd say, hey, you know, there's a deadline, he should have met it. And the response in every single case that I got was, yeah, he should have met it. One time, they actually even sanctioned the lawyer. But he should have met the deadline, but it's too important, the case. It's too important that justice is done for the clients than to keep a two-day deadline. And so maybe, you know, the lawyer should have met the deadline, but the courts have held, you know what, justice is more important than a two-day deadline. And so we had the same thing happening in Florida. We had the Florida Supreme Court saying getting the election right is more important than getting all the counting done, particularly when the counting was done, you know, fairly incompetently. I want to deal with Mark Oberholder's second 2 points. He mentions New Jersey election law with Lautenberg. In that case, again, you had the Democrats wanting a choice. Torricelli had resigned, and the Democrats said that the voters should have a choice rather than have no choice at all. Again, erring on the side of choice. And finally, with the California recall. I got to tell you, Mark, I would support the California recall if it had two things in the law that I think would make it more democratic. If, number one, and this is most important to me, because I think it really goes back to the reason for a recall vote. Number one, it should be that people who get petitions, people who sign those signatures, shouldn't be paid. You shouldn't have, as Daryl Issa did, paid signature gatherers, okay? That's what he had, and he paid millions of dollars for people to gather the signatures. If Californians, enough of them, are so angry that they sign petitions or they spend their own spare time standing in front of shopping centers to get signatures, I have no problem with that. But I do have a problem with this kind of financing, because when you think about it, hey, you know, it takes a lot of anger for people to sign a petition. That doesn't take much for 10% of a population to be against its governor. And so now the Democrats, if they want to play and use the same Republican tactics, what can they do? They could go and, you know, finance, if a Republican wins, millions of dollars and do their own election. And then we could just keep having recalls and not respecting elections. So I think the recall law should be changed so that you can't pay people to do signatures. And I also think, and this is really important, that when you have the recall election, if no one gets 50% of the vote, there should be a runoff. Because the reason why we're having so much craziness, really, here in California is because people know they can win with 23% of the vote, 25% of the vote. If we could just take the top two candidates and do a runoff, that would be pure democracy. So again, I'm not arguing with you, Mark, that they can't do what they're doing in California. It's legal, but I just don't think it's really the proper way to go. If they change that law to make people have to do it on their spare time and not pay for it, and also if they would do 50% elections, that would make it fair to me. But I'm going to come back with your calls right after this.
Greater Washington, Baltimore area are discovering a new concept in furniture and accessories for the home. Brunelli Home Accents in the Leesburg Corner Premium Outlet Mall. At Brunelli Home Accents, you can browse through a remarkable selection of unique designs, domestic and international, contemporary and traditional. Select a new dining room table by Masterworks,
artwork from Artisan House, occasional and dining room tables by Butler Furniture, Italian sofas by FCM Divani, light fixtures, mirrors, and imported vases by Josefina, and of course settings for your table by Brunelli. Located at the Premium Corner Outlet Mall on Fort Evans Road, just off the bypass, Brunelli Home Accents has the designs to satisfy the most discriminating tastes. Stop by soon. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 till 9, Sundays 11 till 6. Phone 703-771-6900. Brunelli Home Accents.
There's nothing like home improvement projects.
Oh, yeah? What are you planning?
Something to make our skin softer, cleaning easier, laundry softer and brighter.
Uh-huh.
Something that can even lower our utility bills and keep our pipes from clogging.
Oh, really?
And something that'll make our drinking water taste better than ever.
You can do all that in one weekend?
I can do all that in one phone call. Hey, Culligan Man.
For over 65 years, families have been saying, hey, Culligan Man, when they need a trusted water expert. Your local Culligan Man can help you choose the system that's just right for your home. And he backs it with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Right now, get both the Culligan water softener and drinking water for one low price. Only $9.95 a month for the first 3 months. Enjoy Culligan water for your entire home and our best offer ever. So trust the water experts. Just call today and say,
hey, Culligan Man.
Improving your water is easy. Call your local Culligan dealer in Dulles today. You can trust the water experts.
Dealer participation may vary. Visit Culligan.com for details. Expires August 31st.
We're back here at the Inside Scoop, and we're taking your calls. And the question is, why is the Republican Party so anti-democratic? We're going to go beyond the California recall and try to figure out why are they doing these tactics. But first, we got a call from California. Maybe he wants to talk about the recall. We got Mike in California, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? What do you think about the recall or something else?
You know, I'm not a big fan of the recall. I knew it was going to devolve into the sort of circus that it has, but I certainly understand why it's happened.
Okay.
And to a large degree, it has happened because of the Democratic Party apparatus here in California. And I mean, first, please, let me explain where I'm coming from. I personally believe that it's gotten to the point where parties in this country are much more concerned with perpetuation of themselves than with what is good for the country.
Okay.
And I think that the party in power is going to abuse that power.
Now, do you think it's the Democratic Party in California, or do you think it's Gray Davis?
I think to a large degree it is the Democratic Party. I mean, I live in a state where the Speaker of the California House a few years ago gerrymandered this state so successfully as to ensure that there will never be another Republican run legislature in this state.
Now, wait a minute. My understanding of the gerrymander was that they basically, it was an incumbent protection plan, which, frankly, I don't support, but would help both Democrats and Republicans to keep their current seats without changing.
Oh, that was the term limits thing?
No. That actually, the redistricting was to protect the current incumbents, both in the House and also representatives, and also in the California legislature. Now, let me agree with you that I think that's wrong. That I think that districting should be, as frankly as Iowa does it, divided according to sort of geographical units. I got to tell you, gerrymandering, you may well know, comes from a long, terrible tradition. It goes back to Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts in the 1820s, who designed a district to look like a salamander, and so they called it gerrymandering. That's actually where we get the word. And so parties have traditionally used their power to redistrict, and I don't really like it. I don't think it should be that way, but both parties do it. My problem in Texas is that they're doing it outside the 10-year limits that all the other states do it on based on the census. But I'll agree with you. I think that gerrymandering should be restricted in all parties. But that can't be the reason why there's such a recall, the gerrymandering.
Well, I think it plays a large part of it because, I mean, when you have a number, let's just say Democrats in this instance, that are so completely secure in their seats, John Burton, for example, I'm sure that's not a name that means anything nationally, and I hope it never does, but they are just unrepentantly taxing and spending and proposing more tax increases at this very day as California is on the verge of an economic cliff.
Well, now, wait a minute, Mike. My understanding is that most of California's taxes and spending are controlled by that very Democratic force, the California voter, that you've got proposition after proposition where the people vote for more money for education, for example, and they vote for more money for after-school care, Arnold Schwarzenegger's program, and then they vote for Prop 13 saying you can't tax people for it. So if you're talking about, you know, people who are causing the deficit, you're spending too much and taxing too little, maybe it's the California voter. What do you think about that idea?
Well, the budget to this point is still put forth by the legislature.
True.
And it is signed by the governor.
True, but my understanding is about 80% of it is controlled by some of these citizen initiatives. So there's not much room there. The other thing is that Gray Davis, and again, I agree with you that Gray Davis is not my favorite candidate. When I lived in California, I actually voted for Jane Harman. I'll just disclose that now. He's not my favorite guy in the world. But one of the things he was spending money on was infrastructure, the kind of stuff that, you know, affected the electricity grid. But I guess I want to get off the issue of whether Gray Davis is a good guy or not, or whether he's a good governor or not, because that's all well and good. If you don't like the man, you certainly would have had the right to vote for him again in 4 years. I want to deal really with the process. Do you support the recall process? And do you, for example, support my ideas of reform, which would be, number one, you shouldn't pay people to gather signatures, and number two, they should have a runoff, a 50% winner. What do you think of those two ideas?
Well, it's pretty traditional to pay people to collect signatures.
Do you support the practice?
That's a reasonably acceptable method of collecting signatures. I'm not necessarily saying I'm against that.
Okay, because I think if people care enough, they should get out in the streets on their own time and get people to sign. If it's an issue that's, I mean,
Mark. I mean, people in this country, we're apathetic in this country.
But if we're apathetic, then maybe we should let our representatives decide some of these issues. And I mean, shouldn't we save this kind of direct democracy for issues that really matter to people?
Unfortunately, I think that this is a reaction to frustration that we have with our representatives that seem to be so tied to special interests that they're not looking out for us.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that I disagree with you. In fact, it makes me quite nervous to think that the next governor of California could be elected by 10% of the vote.
Yeah, it could be Gary Coleman.
You know,
or Angeline.
You might be right.
I don't think so, but you never know. You never know. So you agree at least with the second proposition that I gave, that there should be a runoff between the top two candidates.
I definitely agree with that. This whole thing is makes me a little nervous. It's really not the way that we should elect a governor to run this state.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much for your call.
Hey, thank you, Mark.
I'm going to go now to Ken from San Francisco. Ken, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. I've got a question for you. First of all, I love your show. You bring up a lot of good points
that
I don't think are made elsewhere.
Thank you.
But my question is this. For the Republican Party, for the next election, say, if Bush wasn't running again, is there any Republican that you'd really favor, and why?
Well, I think Bush is running again, but I'll tell you some Republicans I respect. I respect John McCain. Now, I don't agree with a lot of his policies. I'll say that right from the start, and you know, when we get to the presidential election, I can go through them, the ways I don't agree with him. But I'll agree with this. I think he's an honest man. I think he's a decent man, and I think he's a man who cares more about his country than he does about politics. And while I wouldn't vote for him, probably because I tend to not like his views on, you know, abortion or on environment or civil rights or tax, a lot of things, I agree that he's an honest man. He's someone who has been called a maverick because he doesn't just fall in line and do whatever the Republican Party tells him to do. And so I do respect him. Other Republicans I respect Chris Shays of Connecticut. I've seen him up close when I was out working there, and this is, again, a person who doesn't necessarily follow his party. I think most Republicans do fall lockstep with their party, and that's a shame. I'll tell you a Republican I respect that you may be surprised, or maybe not. In Alabama, there's a Republican governor by the name of Bob Riley, who is an evangelical Christian, very conservative on the kinds of issues I care about, civil rights, religious freedom. But he's actually trying to have a tax increase in Alabama, because in Alabama, the poor pay a higher percentage of taxes than the rich. And Bob Riley, taking it out of his Christian tradition, as his evangelical tradition, and I got to respect this, thinks that you got to look out for the poor. And so he is fighting his whole Republican establishment, and they're shocked. Because, and I've never quite understood why groups that call themselves the Christian Coalition, frankly, aren't doing what Jesus did. You know, look out for the poor, the underprivileged. I mean, Jesus hung out with lepers and prostitutes, not with rich people in the temple. So I got to give Bob Riley credit. So there, how about three Republicans that I respect? Now let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of those these tactics that I've been talking about? Are there any of them that you'll defend? Do you agree with me that they're pretty extreme? What do you think?
Even though I'm more conservative, I think, than you are, I actually tend to agree with you, and I don't think that there's a choice, that we have to implement them.
Okay.
I don't think that there's a choice. Can I ask you one other question?
Sure.
Also?
Sure.
Do you think that the Republican Party is more? Do you think you may disagree with them more because they're more conservative?
No. I mean, I have to be clear here. I have my own political views. They tend to be in terms of your freedoms. Your freedoms. I think that you should have freedom. I'm a very libertarian in that way. When it comes to government should leave you alone. In fact, I want to have a whole show on the drug war, which I think is taking a lot of people who are pathetic but not criminal and locking them up. So I think the government should basically leave you alone if you're not hurting anybody or not hurting yourself in some extreme way. When it comes to public policy, I think the government does have a role to play, whether it's helping the electricity grid or providing schools or, teaching people how to make a living, to do well in our nation. So I do support a number of government programs that I think actually help people achieve in the capitalist society that we have. But my problem right now, and I appreciate you talking about sort of basic differences between Democrats and Republicans. I would have no problem fighting the good fight and arguing a question of ideas with members of the Republican Party. But they don't seem to want to do that. I would love to have a fair trade. In a fair election, of course, Al Gore won more than half a million votes over Bush, which means that he beat Carter over Ford, that was by 300,000. Kennedy over Nixon was 150,000. Nixon over Humphrey was about 150,000. So Gore killed those three presidents, and yet he's not president today. And the reason he's not has nothing to do with Electoral College. The reason he's not is because we have, and we know this to be true now, 91,000 Floridians that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush took off the voter rolls. Just took them off. Valid voters. More than 50% were black. Now, why hasn't this been punished? Well, it's very simple. The Florida state apparatus is controlled by Republicans, and the national apparatus is very happy that Florida is controlled by Republicans because that's why they're in power. So you have this illegal act, this really affront to democracy, and no one's being punished for it. And this is the kind of stuff that makes my blood boil. I am more than willing to accept. And you got to remember, a Republican president hasn't been elected in 15 years. It hasn't been since 1988, since George H.W. Bush was elected over Michael Dukakis. It's been a long time since Republicans have won legitimately. And yet they control all branches of government, all branches of government. And so I think that we have to explore their tactics and how they're doing it. And just one more thing, Ken, I just want to give you an example of some tactics of Karl Rove. Karl Rove is often called the brains behind George W. Bush. Here are some of his tactics that have been reported. In 1970, Karl Rove pretended to be a volunteer for state treasurer candidate Alan J. Dixon. He swiped Dixon letterhead and mailed 1,000 copies of a letter promising, quote, free beer, free food, girls, and a good time for nothing, unquote, at the Democrats' campaign headquarters. Now, that's amusing, but it's a dirty trick. Another thing he did was he planted a bug in his own... this was the governor race of Bill Clements in Texas. He planted a bug there and then claimed that the opponents had planted the eavesdropping device. I mean, this is, again, this is just the kind of stuff they do, from small stuff like Karl Rove to big stuff like stealing an election. And whatever your views are, I want to hear, and I would hope that some people, come on, Republicans, give me a call, 703-777-1200, or you can call toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. I want to hear a Republican that say, I'm a conservative, I support the conservative philosophy, you're dead wrong, Mark, on all those things, but I'm against these kind of tactics. They're anti-democratic. So I'd like to hear that. Thank you very much for your call, Kim.
Thank you, Mark.
We're going to come back with more calls right back after this. The number here is 703 877-1200, or you can call
at Jenkins Nissan of Frederick. They speak the universal
right after
language
this
of savings, and they've got a great deal for you no matter what language you speak or what you're looking for. Right now, Jenkins is offering $1,500 cash back plus 1.9% financing on Xterras, plus huge savings on 2003 Sentras. Get $1,500 cash back or 0.9% financing, and for a limited time only, choose from $3,000 cash back or $1,500 plus 0.9% financing on Sentra GXEs.
Hi, I'm Steve Latour, sales associate at Jenkins Nissan of Frederick. Stop in and see me today and test drive your new Nissan. At Jenkins Nissan, no matter what language you speak, we speak your language.
Hi, I'm Priscilla, sales associate at Jenkins. Hola, soy Priscilla, asistente de ventas en Jenkins Nissan de Frederick. Están bienvenidos a que maneje y pruebe tu nuevo Nissan. En Jenkins, no importa qué idioma hablas, nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
Jenkins Nissan of Frederick, at the corner of East and 9th Streets. Visit them online at Frederick.com or JenkinsMotors.com. Subject to credit approval through NMAC.
You know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one in this commercial. And if there's one thing I know, it's this. Traffic lights, traffic jams, and Sunday drivers can give you a driving headache. That's why I recommend Traficin, the little fuchsia pill in the SUV-shaped bottle. Just pop a Traficin before your morning commute and...
Hey, hold the meds, Doc. There are a lot of ways to relieve the headaches of Loudoun County traffic, but the smartest remedy is to avoid it altogether. On the Dulles Greenway. You can drive from Leesburg to Dulles in about 15 minutes. 65 miles an hour the whole way. No traffic lights, no traffic hassles, no pounding, throbbing, pulsating. Well, you know. It may even help clear up those nasty little worry wrinkles on your forehead. And for less than a bottle of extra strength aspirin, the Greenway's the cheapest stress reliever around. Oh, one warning. Driving the Greenway could be habit forming. The Dulles Greenway. Don't stress. Just drive.
We're back here at the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Lines are open. You can call 703-77-1200, or you can call toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. We're talking here about some of the anti-democratic tactics used by the Republican Party. And I want to know from you, do you support this? Do you think these are a good idea? Do you think that the Democrats should play by the same rules? I was reading before we left about some of the dirty tricks that Karl Rove is very proud of playing. I'll give you a couple more. One thing he did in the same race, Bill Clement's gubernatorial race in Texas, is he mailed out a fake newspaper with an account of Governor Mark White's drunk driving arrest as a college student. So he made up a newspaper and mailed it out to people, ironically dealing with the governor's drunk driving arrest when, of course, we all know about George Bush's drunk driving arrest. He also put out push polls where people would call in George Bush's campaign against Ann Richards and ask what they thought of her as a lesbian. Ann Richards, as far as I know, is not a lesbian, but that was his way of trying to change the views of Republican voters. And I want to know, you know, are these things fair? We've got Dennis Hastert, the Speaker of the House. One of the things he did is that he gave a press conference in front of a throng of hard hat wearing working Americans who are actually lobbyists in disguise. I have the memo that went out from the Speaker's office. It says, this is a memo from the National Association of Manufacturers. It was going to the manufacturers' lobbyists. And they write, quote, "The Speaker's office was very clear in saying that they do not need people in suits. If people want to participate, and we do need bodies," that's all in caps, by the way, "they must be," all in caps, "dressed down, appear to be," all in caps, "real worker types," etc. "They must be dressed down, appear to be real worker types," etc. You know, if the Republicans have a plan, it's a plan to give a lot of money to rich people, they should be able to defend their plan. And I want to know, you know, why don't they just play by the rules and defend their plan the way it is? I got a call. I got Larry in Falls Church.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. I want to know, first of all, I wanted to say that I thought that Mike in California was correct, that you could go ahead and pay for signatures on petitions, and I also say that the Democrats ought to be going out and paying for people with signatures.
Yeah, but doesn't this lead to a case where we've got, look, you only need 10% to call a recall. So 10% of Californians or any state are probably not going to like the governor any time. If you spend millions of dollars for signature gatherers, you can have a recall every 3 months because you're always going to get 10% to do them. I think that you should have people who really care to have to sign those signatures. I mean, what's the point of paying someone? Then money decides the issue.
Yeah, but the Democrats could raise money too, Mark.
But why should they have to? Shouldn't it be that the standard should be that you follow what the legislature says, and only in cases of really where the populace is angry, really mad, and they go out and do it on their own, then we should change the law.
Isn't money the mother's milk of politics, and if the Republicans
Well, it is, but it shouldn't be. That's my problem.
Yeah, but look, Mark, hasn't money been involved in politics in this country almost from the beginning?
Well, you know what? I guess it has. But I got to say, I have a problem with it, and I think that no one has taken it this far before. I mean, this is the first recall in California's history. The law has been on the book for 90 years, and I think they need to change it. Because I think that the purpose of the progressives that put that on the books 90 years ago was to deal with true democracy, when the people are angry, not when the people with money are angry.
Yeah, but you know, people have a right to spend the money however they want, and if they want to spend it to recall a governor, what's wrong with that?
Because it says that you need 10% of California voters, not that you need $10 million, right? Why have signatures at all, Larry? Why not just say, if you spend $20 million, the governor has a recall race? That's more direct.
Well, you can argue it that way, but I do think what really has to happen is that you've got to have the money to get the people out to get interested. And a lot of people just won't spend the time and effort, and a lot of people don't have the time and effort to volunteer. So if you pay people, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I think that if you're going to do something extreme, like try to overturn a recent election, you should have people who really care about the issue and aren't just doing it because they're being paid. But I thank you for your call. All right, listen, we're going to take one more commercial, and we're going to come back with the my first top 10 list, the top 10 reasons why I'm voting Democratic. And so we'll come back with that right after this here on the Inside Scoop.
AM 1200 WAGE, Leesburg and Loudoun County, is your sound choice for news.
My dad is a hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. Then he helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see. Even when he's a little scared. My dad is a firefighter. He does great things. And the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration, a part of FEMA, reminds you to protect the heroes who protect our lives. Have a smoke alarm on every floor. Test it monthly. Replace the battery yearly. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, 60% of all fire deaths occur in a home without a working smoke alarm. The good news is, that's a fact that can change. For more information, visit the U.S. Fire Administration at www.usfa.fema.gov. Working for a fire-safe America.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about some of the dirty tricks that Republicans are playing, and we really haven't gotten to the question of whether Democrats should do the same. I want to say, I think there is an example of where Democrats should have fought fire with fire, I think. But I would say it's a way to defend the Constitution rather than attack it. In 2000, I remember very clearly the day when Scalia stopped the Florida count. The Florida Supreme Court had ordered all the votes to be counted. Not just it was fair. It wasn't just the counties that Gore picked. It wasn't just counties that Bush wanted. All the counties were going to be counted under a single standard. And Scalia stopped that with an opinion that said, we can't allow the votes to be counted because to do that would challenge the claim of George Bush to be president of the United States, which I think has got things a little bit backwards. I think that you got to count the votes before you know who's president. Scalia obviously has a different idea. Determine who's president, and then, if there's time, count the votes, and we all know that, of course, they were never counted. Here's what I would have liked to have seen. Can you imagine, in the rooms, remember where all the women and men were counting the votes in Florida, if someone had grabbed the ballot boxes and stood on a table, just like Yeltsin on a tank, and said, The whole world's watching. The whole world's watching. Scalia can't stop democracy. Count those votes. Count those votes. And the police had had to pry the ballots from these people's hands so that they could never be counted. I think then, and maybe only then, Americans would have understood what really happened. What really happened in the selection of 2000 when the Supreme Court issued an opinion so illogical that even their own clerks knew that the opinion was full of crap. By the way, if you want more information on this opinion, you can go to my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, and click on A Layman's Guide to Bush v. Gore, and it goes through and explains the court opinion. But I think that kind of civil disobedience, when you really believe in something and you're willing to stand up for it and even go to jail to protect Americans' right to vote, that's good. That's the kind of maybe tactics that Democrats should do. I don't support, though, another kind of civil disobedience, unless Chief Justice Roy Moore of Alabama wants to go to jail for his beliefs, and that is he's defying a court order to remove the Ten Commandments, this 3-ton granite that he's put. And, you know, this, unlike stopping vote counting, which I think is a pretty extreme maneuver. It's so extreme, in fact, the Supreme Court said that you can never cite this opinion as precedent, and that's unprecedented. I think that in terms of protection of separation of church and state, the Chief Justice of Alabama should follow that court order, and if he doesn't, he should be jailed for it. He should be willing to stand up to his views. And, you know, all the other issues that really weren't discussed. You know, why is the head of the Republican Party in Virginia eavesdropping on Democrats? Why is Tom DeLay using federal resources, taking them away from the fight against terrorism, to help in the Texas gerrymander? Why is the press not reporting that Colorado has done this very same gerrymander? You know, people just aren't talking about these things enough. And I think the reason is because the media just doesn't follow these things in kind of detail. You know, when you have, for example, what's going on in the Senate, when you have the Democrats and they're filibustering 4 out of about 100 who they've approved, the Republicans focus on that and they act like that's somehow wrong, when, of course, filibustering, you know, judges have been done many times in American history. And they make a big play in the press. And the press just doesn't follow when you have Republican filibustering of the, you know, the energy plan or anything else. So I hope that today I've brought some of this to your attention. And I want to conclude with the first top 10 list that we've read here on the Inside Scoop. And it's the top 10 reasons why I'm voting Democratic, okay? And so we're going to get a little theme music here. Number 10, I'm not a bigot or a self-centered jerk. Number 9, top 10 reasons why I'm voting Democratic. Number 9, multinational corporations don't need welfare. Number 8, World War III still seems like a bad idea. Number 7, despite Catherine Harris and the Republican Supreme Court goons, I still believe in democracy. Number 6, Dick Cheney is really Darth Vader. Number 5, it'll piss off Rush Limbaugh and Fox. Number 4, W makes even Dan Quayle seem intelligent. Number 3, the environment is supposed to be non-toxic. Number 2, it's the economy, stupid, part 2. And the top reason why I'm voting Democratic is number 1, under Democrats, only interns get screwed. So, I hope you like my list. Tune in next week. We're going to have more Inside Scoop. And we're going to talk about, I'm not really sure yet. It kind of depends on what happens in the news. Maybe we'll focus on Bush's use of science, a misuse of science. And tune in next week, every Sunday, on the Inside Scoop.